January the 16th, 1986, Virginia E. Emmerich of the Louisville Unit Women's Overseas Service League interviewing Kay Wellinger, also a member of the Louisville Unit, and a former American Red Cross worker in Vietnam.
Well, I graduated from college in 1966. I had majored in Russian, and I was working in the in Washington at the CIA. And like most young people, I thought things weren't interesting enough, and I was looking around for some other work and couldn't really find anything until I had found someone who had done, who had been in Vietnam with the Red Cross. So I went over to interview, hoping they would have something maybe in France. Vietnam didn't sound very, or maybe that was too exciting, but I thought they might have someplace more glamorous to send me. And when I interviewed, they asked me if I could do a number of different things, like play a musical instrument or draw, and I said, no, I couldn't do any of those things. And they said, well, fine, could you start in 2 weeks?
Okay.
You're in.
You're warm, so you're in.
All right. Were you ready in 2 weeks? Did you enter a study period or study time?
And as a matter of fact, there was less, it seems like it was less than 2 weeks before the orientation period was supposed to start, so I had to go give notice before they even called to tell me definitely I had the job. But within 2 weeks, I had my apartment packed up and my car sold, and I was ready to start.
That's amazing. Well, what was the date that you started? Do you remember?
I really can't remember.
Well, you remember the month that you started your was this a period of training that you started?
At we have a 2 week training period, and it was in the spring of 69. And I can't remember if it was March or April.
Oh, okay, good. And how long were you there in Washington then?
2 weeks for the training.
Where you started. And then where were you sent?
We went directly from there to Saigon.
All right. How many people went? Were these men and women, or
just
women?
This program was just for women. It was called Supplemental Recreation Activities Overseas, and it was a program for women who were college graduates who were single, and we took recreation programs out to the field as opposed to the recreation workers who lived in the hospitals.
How did you get over there? What mode of transportation?
Oh, we flew. Very long flight. We flew from Washington to San Francisco and stayed overnight, and then went from Travis Air Force Base to Saigon.
What sort of codes did they issue? Or did they issue them, or did you have to pay for them?
No, we had uniforms. We had a two-piece dress uniform. It was a suit. And a two-piece culotte outfit that nobody wore. And
why didn't they wear them?
Well, they were not very comfortable.
Oh.
And then we had a little dress. It was just an A-line dress in that blue corded material that they still use for Red Cross uniforms.
Uh-huh.
And we could wear loafers or tennis shoes. And looking back at all of the boots and all the things the fellows wore and all the things about Agent Orange, it seems kind of interesting that we were running around in dresses and tennis shoes, but that's what we did.
Did you have any real civilian clothes that you could wear, or could you fancy yourself up with hair ribbons and that, scarves or what have you?
When we were on duty, they didn't care for us to wear anything that wasn't in our uniform, but evenings and weekends on our own time, we could wear civilian clothes.
I see. Well, weekends you had and could do with what you wanted? Were there places you could go for your own socialization and fun?
Well, no. I was assigned to a unit northwest of Saigon that used to be a rubber plantation. And it was in a forward area, so there was very little to do evenings and weekends, usually we went to activities that the men were having, but it was more like work. Even if you had a date and you went someplace, you were really everybody's date. On Saturday night, we had to eat at the general's mess. It was rather formal and required.
Then how many other girls were you living with or working with?
Well, when I first got to that unit, there were six of us all together. Later we took on, at that time we were working just with the 1st Infantry Division, and later we assumed responsibility for the 1st Air Cab also, so we got two more people, so there were eight of us.
I see. Had you known any of these girls before?
No. No, none of them were in my training class.
Well, tell me something about the men you worked with on that assignment. Were they in battle, or were they close to it, or what were they doing? Did you know what their jobs were?
Yes. Well, we did several things. The main thing that we did was to go out from Lai K, which is where we live, to the fire bases that had been cut out of the countryside. And those units had an infantry company and an artillery battery. So when we would go, the men that were there were the ones that were not out in the field during that time, and because they would rotate, and we'd have so many platoons out and then so many platoons in. Of course, those fire bases were often fired upon even when the men were there guarding that area.
Were you ever under fire yourself?
Oh, fairly often when we were in our base camp.
Did you have special places to go and special duties at time of being fired upon or under fire?
Our main duty was to get out of the way and not bother anybody. We had a bunker of sorts outside the back door of our little house. Since this had been a plantation, we lived in a house. Bunker was something the girls had built. Mainly we're talking about rockets and mortars. We didn't get overrun by any people while I was there, although some areas did. And the bunker was so pitiful that we tried not to go to it, and our house was fairly substantial and was probably safer than the bunker. However, one time our supervisor from Washington came when we had some rockets, and she said we had to stay in the bunker, and it was really awful. It was built for about four people, and there were seven of us.
Oh.
So we arranged to get a new one built that was more comfortable.
Were you under the Army, or were you under a Red Cross supervisor, or who was your immediate supervisor while you were there?
Our supervisors were Red Cross people in Saigon.
I see. Was that also the headquarters for the Red Cross in Vietnam?
Yes.
I see. Did you have rules and regulations, though, that you had to abide by that were set up by the Army or the unit that you were working for? Was there ever any conflict or anything?
No, our rules were pretty well set by the Red Cross. For example, we were only supposed to travel on official duty. We couldn't travel on our time off. Things of that sort. Some of the nurses were able to do that, and if they had a day off, they could travel around the country. We were not allowed to do that. The Army housed us and fed us and transported us. One of the jobs that I had when I came in from working during the day was to call all of the units that we were supposed to see the next day and set up our transportation and that kind of.
I see. So you did not have your own transportation in any way. You always had to depend on the unit that you were working with. How did you get your supplies? Did the Red Cross give you all the supplies, or did the units help in any way, or just what? And what sort of things were they that you worked with, or you needed in your work?
That's a good question. We did have an office, and I guess the Red Cross sent us some supplies. We Our recreation programs were primarily things that we made, and we made a lot of visual aids, flashcards, and game boards that were modeled after TV shows and things of that type. But I do remember that the fellas didn't have very much, and we would go out to see them. We carried a big canvas bag with our program in it, and they didn't have things. We'd say, "Did you write home, you know, today?" "Well, I don't have any paper. I don't have any pencils." And so I wrote back to our the Red Cross chapter in where my mother lived and asked them to send things like paperback books and pens and stationery and that kind of thing for the fellows.
You got some private help then. Were these men close to rec halls in any way, or are no halls, no places set up for them to have their recreation?
No, that was really the point of our being there. We took the recreation to them, and even at our base camp, there was no rec hall or anything like that. Now, some of the units in the bigger areas to the rear did have big rec halls and USO clubs and service clubs and Red Cross clubs, but our forward units did not have anything like that.
Can you give me a typical day in your working, in your job? What time you would start out, how far you might have to drive, and did any of the fellows help you set up when you got there? Were they glad to see you? I'd just like to know what the whole feeling was about it.
Well, it usually started pretty early. We were usually trying to get out to the field by about 7, but we didn't drive any place. We weren't allowed to drive on the road except for one area, and even to get to that area, we had to fly. So we went by helicopter most all of the time, occasionally in an airplane. Ideally, we might go to 2 or 3 fire bases a day, spending a couple of hours at each place and getting transportation to the next place. Most of the time, it didn't work that way because there wasn't enough transportation to take us. And so usually, we spent most of the day at one base, fire base, or maybe 2. We also visited the base camps for the different divisions, and we might go and do some programs maybe in somebody's mess hall, or we might take some Kool-Aid or other things around, maybe to the flight line where the mechanics were working or things like that. So it depended on what your run was going to be that day. We had base camps, fire bases, and then we had a place where there was some, I guess it was a water purification plant and that kind of thing. So it varied quite a lot depending on what your assignment was.
Were the men who, for whom this program was available, were they given time off from their jobs to do it? They knew you were coming and they were waiting?
Most of the time they did, yes. When they're at the fire base, there really wasn't anything to do during the day. Most of the fighting took place at night. During the day, they loaded ammunition, they filled sandbags for fortifications. It was very boring. So they either were doing something that was very tedious, or they were terrified in the midst of fighting. So they usually knew what day we came to their particular fire base. We had a fairly routine schedule. And they seemed to really look forward to it, although there were always some unexpected surprises. Sometimes we didn't always arrive at the most opportune moment. But they were certainly allowed to come to our program. And we got varying amounts of support from the commanding officers. Some of them were very supportive and others were neutral.
Did you have the usual thing, a chance to talk with them, like, where are you from? And you know, the boys wanted to know where and try and find somebody close to home.
Usually more time than we wanted, because after we do our program, when we couldn't get out, that's how we'd spend the rest of the day, just visiting with them in small groups, serving lunch, which was always kind of fun because they didn't expect us to be standing there serving the vegetables. So we got quite a lot of time to talk to them. And of course in the evening, on our quote free time, quote, we did a lot of visiting either at our house or at the various units around our base camp.
When you traveled around to the different bases, did you wear a dress uniform? You didn't have slacks? You didn't
No, we wore a dress.
You did always?
We climbed in and out of helicopters in our dresses and in and out of
huge trucks,
and everything else.
Did you ever wish you had something sturdier? Were there times you might have been in mud or you might have been in a situation where the sturdier type of clothes would have done better?
Well, it was very hot in the area that I was in. Now, up north, it did get cooler, but we stayed around 100 degrees a lot of the time. So even when it rained during monsoon, usually you were just satisfied to have on the dress because it was cooler.
I see. What time of the year did the monsoons come? Were you there when the season for monsoons?
It came in the late summer.
Late summer.
Mm-hmm.
Let me recoup. You arrived over there in summer?
In the spring.
In the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And how long totally were you in service in Vietnam?
In 6 months.
For 6 months.
Mm-hmm. I came back in October.
Was this the usual period that a person would sign up for?
No, they usually signed up for a year, but they would let you come home early, and I came home early to get married.
Oh, I see. To someone you met over
mm-hmm.
there?
Yes.
I see. What was his position in the Army or in the setup that he was working in?
Well, he was the executive officer for his battalion, and he lived in the one area where we could ride on the road, and he was assigned against his will as our escort because we had to have a driver and an officer escort, and he hated it. How I met him.
I see. All right, let me. Kate, tell me something, tell me what you remember about your pay, if you remember anything.
Well, I don't remember very much of that. I remember that I had to take a significant pay cut from my job, but I think it was only about $4,000 or $5,000. We did, however, get hazardous duty pay of $60 a month, and that's primarily what we lived on. Most of the girls sent their regular pay home. Cost us $10 to pay the girl who cleaned and took care of our uniforms for us and cleaned the house. And then we had $50 to spend, but there wasn't anything to spend it on. So that was more than enough.
You had no chance to buy souvenirs and such things as that?
No, they had a little PX, and we could get some of the necessities and some soft drinks. But other than that, there really wasn't much a place to spend it on, unless we went to Long Bend, where they had a big PX and nail polish and perfume, and that was really quite a treat.
Oh, you did get there at some time,
yeah.
Right there. What type of housing did you have? Were they good, substantial places, or just things put up for you, temporary?
Well, I understand when they first went that they went in tents. I've heard that. Now, we had a regular house that had a kitchen and a bath and two bedrooms and a living room. I did take a trip to cover for someone who was ill, and I stopped at Cameron Bay. Those girls lived in trailers and had hot water and air conditioning, which we thought was marvelous. And then in Ante, where I worked where the girl was sick, they lived in the nurse's barracks, and they were very much like a typical barracks building. But they had individual rooms built in a quadrangle. So the accommodations were quite different depending on where you were assigned and what was available.
Were all assignments given to the women the same, or there weren't any?
Well, when we arrived in Saigon, they interviewed us and spent about 2 days with us before they assigned us. And apparently that was a time to assess whether you would have an assignment in the combat areas in the front or whether you would go to the rear. And some people, I gathered, never really got any of those smaller assignments in the front areas. Some stayed primarily to the rear in the larger groups that had service clubs and that kind of thing. Probably I thought some people were more suited to that and some people more suited to the other. Most of us who were in the forward areas did, however, rotate back to the rear to what they would consider a safer assignment toward the end of the tour.
I see. Did you have any experiences that were unusual or memorable or funny or sad or anything that you remember that comes to your mind?
Well, I guess the thing that I remember most was the first day that we arrived and went directly to the Red Cross office. And of course, our dresses were obviously new and hadn't been worn, and we all looked very frightened. And so we went through about half a day of orientation, and they said that we could have the rest of the day off to look around Saigon and do what we wanted to do. But they told us not to eat in any of the native restaurants, and not to ride in the little pedicabs, and not to ride in a regular cab, and not to walk in small groups, and not to walk in large groups, and never go anyplace by yourself. And then they deposited us at a hotel. And we were hungry. And all we'd heard about was what we couldn't do, and we didn't know how to go about getting anything to eat or where we should go. And finally, another girl and I went downstairs and stood out in the sidewalk, and we must have just really looked, I don't know if exhausted, scared, or confused, but anyway, some fellow came up and asked us if he could help us, and we said we were looking for some place we could eat. So he told us about a place that had a nice, it was an American built hotel, but they had a restaurant. And so we don't know how to get there. And so he pointed out that there was an army bus that would stop across the street, which made a lot of sense, but they hadn't told us about the army bus.
Oh.
They had just told us how not to get any place.
So the army really took care of its people, and the Americans took care of each other. They, at least they made things available if you knew how to go about getting them.
So we ended up going to that restaurant for lunch, and then we were frightened to go anyplace, so we stayed there all afternoon and through dinner until curfew time because we didn't, we just knew we would get hurt if we went out on the street.
Well, curfew time interests me. What was curfew time?
10 o'clock. And that was in Saigon and in our unit, too.
Until what time in the morning, then?
Well, they didn't really have a morning time, but at nighttime, you just had to be in by 10.
I see. Was that for all, the city-wide, for all people, or just the service people?
As far as I know, well...
Or just the girls?
No, the fellows had to be in, too, and I don't know if that applied to the civilian population. It did in our base camp. Everybody had to be in by 10.
How much contact did you have with the natives?
Not very much. We had a girl who came and cleaned for us, and she was very pleasant until they came and arrested her and said she was a spy.
Uh-huh.
And then they sent us...
Had you had any suspicions of this?
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
No. If she was, it really wasn't very evident to us, and there certainly wasn't anything in our house to spy about. So they sent us someone else who didn't speak English, and that was also rather... interesting to try and teach her how to iron and clean a bathroom because she'd never seen a bathroom on iron before. We did go into the village a few times to buy ice and charcoal and that kind of thing, but it was really not safe to go in there. We did not go very often. So we really didn't have very much contact with them.
What were your living conditions for the most part? Comfortable, or you got enough, got your rest, the needed rest, and you got enough food, and you got the things that you needed in that way.
Oh, yes,
but you never wanted for any of that.
No, in fact, my mother would send me care packages, and I was eating steak and champagne. And because if there was a party, we got invited. Since there were only six or eight of us, we were always included.
Oh, yeah. Well, was there anything, any regulation that was unpopular? I mean, there were so many no's, you said, but
was any regulation that really gave you a hardship over there?
I can't think of any that was really a hardship. Your rights
were taken away from you in any way?
No, I think probably that it would have been nice to travel some, because there were some areas of the country that we would have liked to have seen. There was an in-country R&R center for the fellows at Bung Tau, which was supposed to be very beautiful on the beach. And then there was the old city of Dalat, which I think some of the girls got to see who were assigned near there, but the rest of us who were not did not get to see that. And I think that would have been something we would have liked, but at the same time we realized that was probably not a very good idea.
The 6 months that you were there, were you in the one place?
I was in the one place, and then I just did a TDY at the second place.
Explain a TDY, please.
Oh, temporary tour of duty. One of the girls up in Anke had appendicitis and had to have her appendix out there at the military hospital. So they needed somebody to fill in for her, and they just call and say, you're going. You're not asked. They just say, you're going, and they don't tell you how to get there, which was also kind of interesting because I didn't know where it was. So I had to pack a suitcase and go out on the flight line and just hitchhike. And it took me 2 days, and I went quite a few places before I could get there.
If you can, tell me something about the people that you ran across over there, or the visitors, or some of the celebrities who came over to entertain you all. Did you have any like that?
Well, yes. The most important person who came was President Nixon, but he managed to come to the area where I was when I was up on TDY, so I didn't get to see him. Miss America and her group came through, and they called us to ask if the girls could stay with us because they were all sick, and we didn't have any room for them, nor was I sure that we really needed all that competition. But anyway, we didn't feel very glamorous at that time. But I think one of the most interesting things that happened while I was there was that they landed on the moon, and we did have a friend who had a TV who brought it over to our house, and we got to watch the landing on the moon while we were in Vietnam.
That is interesting. In other words, you were able to keep up with the worldwide affairs while you were there. How? Through newspapers? Through your radio? Or how did the information come to you?
Well, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and there was a TV program out of Saigon, and I can't remember all of the how that came about, but we did not have a TV, but there was a TV station, and people in Saigon and anybody who had a TV could get that, and they had the local news, they had shows from America. We had a little pirate radio station there in Lai Cay that played music, and we had our own radio show. The Red Cross girls went one night a week, and we took requests.
You spun the records, huh?
We had a disc jockey who played the records, and while we were out in the field, the fellows would give us a little piece of paper with dedication so they could call in on the field phone.
Oh.
And while we were down there, and we'd talk to them and dedicate songs to them, and that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
What about your mail from home and your correspondence? Did it come through pretty regularly?
It came through, you know, quite well. I can't remember exactly how long, but I would say it probably didn't take more than a week. We had an APO address, just like the fellows did. And
Was your mail censored? Was there ever any evidence of it? Anything cut out that anybody received that they told you about?
No, they had told us not to write down. They had just told us not to write anything about exactly where we were, but that was the only indication about censorship, and of course everybody knew where we were. The American troops were fairly obvious, and so that there really wasn't
Was there much coming and going among the troops, replacements and that sort of thing, or did the same men seem to be around? Did you get back to the same places often?
We went to the same places. Of course, the company that was there last week might not be there this week, or the platoon, and that's I think one of the hardest things for us, when I talked to the other girls, is that we saw so many men and we didn't get to know them very well. And so we would go out and see them, but if they weren't there the next week, we really didn't know that. And that's, I think, one of the problems when I've talked to girls who had problems when they got home. That's one of the things that they point out, was that they really don't know what the effects of what we did are, mm-hmm. in many ways.
What about sickness? Was there much sickness among, well, the men, but particularly among the girls who went over there to work?
We didn't have any sickness in our unit while I was there. Apparently, the girls who died there all died of illness, not of any kind of combat injury.
Illness is picked up there?
Apparently,
so. Uh-huh. I see. Were there many of those?
I think there were just three.
I see. Yeah. Do you have any idea how many Red Cross women were sent to Vietnam?
It's 800. But I don't know if that was just for the SRAO program. There were Red Cross people as field directors at each of the base camps who did the emergency leaves, birth notifications, that kind of thing, which they were separate from us. Then at the major hospitals, they had Red Cross recreation workers who worked with the men who had been injured. So I'm not sure how many Red Cross people totally were assigned over there.
I see. How many different branches of men did you come across over there? Did you see Navy? Did you see Air Force? Did you see infantry? You know, what units like that?
There were units assigned all over country, and through that we covered every branch.
You reached all reached men in all of the services. I see. Kay, is there anything else you remember about your service while you were there in Vietnam, or anything that you think might be interesting to put on this recording? If not, we'll go into when you left there, approximately the date, where you came, when you came back, what happened, and if you want to bring us up to date, well, we'd like to hear it.
Well, I left in October. I had really not planned to leave, but my fiancé wanted to get married, and he didn't want to wait till after we'd finished our tour, so I came home, and since he arranged the leaves in his unit, he followed me shortly thereafter, and we got married in November.
Where?
Of that year, in Anderson, Indiana.
That's
where my parents
your
lived.
Home.
And then he went back to Vietnam for about 3 months and came home, and then we were assigned to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
You were still in Red Cross?
No, I had resigned, but he was a career Army officer, so he was assigned to teach ROTC at the university in Chattanooga.
Okay. All right, we've got you as far as Chattanooga. If you want to go on along that line about your procedure, all right, before you get into that, if you look back in retrospect and tell us the feeling the men had or you had about the men or they had about themselves or just what was going on over there.
Of course, that was a very controversial time. I don't think that I had ever had any question about being there or about the fact that we should have been there. At the time, I had not. I've had a lot of thoughts about it since, but I'm not sure the same. But the men often asked us why we were there. And we were told to say something like, well, because you're here, or something nice like that. I usually told them I didn't know at all, which they seemed to like, because they didn't seem to know either while they were there. But when we talked to them about their work and how they felt about it, I can't remember a single person who didn't tell us that they were there because that was their assignment. They were supposed to be there. They had a job to do, and they were going to do that job for their year and then go home. We didn't hear a lot of griping and complaining. We heard people talking wistfully about being home or back in the world, we called it, about their girlfriends or their wives or whatever. But no one seemed to question, you know, the need for his being there, or that he was not going to do the best he could while he was there.
What about the girls who went over there? Did they, most of them, stay out their regular length of assignment? And did any of them ever take a double assignment, or did they go back after the time was up?
Most of the girls completed their assignment. I know a couple of people who came home early. When I first arrived, the unit director that we had been there for 18 months. They had asked her to extend because of her experience and her expertise in running the unit. None of the people I knew personally stayed over, but I did hear of one young woman who came home after her tour and then returned, and she worked with orphans in Saigon as a civilian, I'm not sure under whose auspices, and was on the plane carrying the orphans out in 1975 that was shot down.
Oh, yeah. What about after you got home? Were there problems among the girls, among the fellas, or among the civilians who were left back here? Just what was the general feeling?
I was surprised later to find people had experienced all kinds of problems, particularly when they arrived in Travis or at San Francisco at the airport. Apparently some people were treated very poorly and spat upon, and even some of the nurses who came back in their uniforms had things thrown at them, and they were cursed. I did not have any experience like that, and I don't know anyone who did. Now, maybe they didn't recognize our uniform and what where we might have been. But even after getting home and settling down and getting married, we didn't ever have any problem. Of course, we associated mostly with military people, but we never experienced any of the harassment that some of the other people report that they're doing.
Kay, I happen to know that in the position that you have now, you come in contact with veterans. What do you think about the Vietnam veterans that you, as a social worker, you might tell us what your work is and see if there's any relationship between your time over there and your working with the patients now.
Well, I'm a social worker at the VA Medical Center, and I've worked at several other medical centers before coming to Louisville. I suppose, although I didn't plan to when I joined the Red Cross, I imagine that my interest in working with the veterans arose from that, and that's why I stayed with the VA. We find, I guess, at our hospital, the Vietnam veterans who have the most difficulties. Only 4% of all veterans use the VA facilities, medical facilities, and so I have to assume that 96% of the Vietnam veterans are doing well or are managing fairly well. But the ones that we see are those that are not managing well, and we do see quite a few problems, a lot of depression, a lot of nightmares and problems with putting Vietnam behind them.
Do you have that, or have you seen that among women veterans of, that is, Army women who were in Vietnam also?
The Army women I know haven't reported that, although the nurses that I know say that they can't get other Vietnam nurses to identify themselves. This is quite a problem. And they assume that there are some women out there who are experiencing quite a few difficulties. Among the Red Cross women that I know, yes, there are quite a few people who've had what they call post-traumatic stress, and a few women who've really never been able to work since they got back.
Has Red Cross recognized this problem among their workers, and are they doing anything about it?
For the not girls? That I know of. Most of the VA vet centers will see civilians, although they're not authorized to do so. But as far as the Red Cross, I have no information that they've checked with anyone or have any provision for helping people.
I see. Well, it's certainly been a revelation to me to hear your side of the story, since this is the first Vietnam member of any service that we've interviewed so far. If there is nothing else you want to say, is there anything that you'd like to add to it? All right, thank you very much.